Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Our guest today, Sean Jasper, is well-known in state and local political circles. He served 12 terms as a member of the New Hampshire House, several years as Speaker, and almost two decades as a selectman in his hometown of Hudson. But for the past year, Jasper's been mingling with a different type of crowd, New Hampshire farmers. Sean Jasper was appointed Commissioner of Agriculture in December of 2017. It's a field where he's at home. Jasper grew up on a poultry farm, worked for a time in his cousin's poultry business, and studied agriculture and management at UNH. Today in The Exchange, Sean Jasper's here, and we'll cover the issues facing New Hampshire farmers. And let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or call in 1-800-892-6477. And Commissioner Jasper, welcome back. Good to see you. And I already know I'm going to say Speaker Jasper by mistake at least one time during the hour. But Commissioner Jasper, welcome. Nice to see you.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So in a recent interview, Commissioner Jasper, you were asked, in seven words or less, what's your advice to farmers? And you said, in two words, embrace change. So what do you mean by that?
Well, the only thing that really is certain in life is change. And those who fight change usually end up on the losing side of things. It was funny that my grandfather, and I have it on his shelf in my office, our brochure from when we were in the hatching egg business, selling hatching eggs and baby chicks. And my grandfather's sort of model was that we were the modern Jasper Poultry Farms. But 30 years later, when my dad was taking over and he was really modernizing things, putting in automatic feeders, his father said, pretty soon you'll have this whole place, you know, mechanized. And he said it to my dad in a very negative tone. And my father replied, well, I hope so.
Yeah, because I'm the modern
Jasper farmer.
It's
funny, for some people, you know, modernization stops at some point, and anything that comes afterwards is just a gimmick, I suppose. But you've got to keep moving. You've got to keep up with technology, or you will be out of business.
Well, and maybe it's hard for farmers to embrace change because they're so busy just doing the farming. It may be hard for them to keep up with all the changes happening around them in terms of mechanization.
It certainly can be, but generally, you know, there's a saying among successful farmers, and I suppose with anybody who has a physical job, you know, work smarter, not harder. And, you know, embracing that change allows you to have more time to focus on business. Because if you're not focusing on those things, you're going to end up losing money because everybody else is making those changes and they're able to operate that much more efficiently.
So what are some of the big sort of meta changes that you've seen in farming, Commissioner Jasper, that our farmers need to embrace?
Well, certainly in the dairy industry, one of the big issues is trying to find people willing to milk cows. So the robotic milking machines, and to the best of my knowledge, there are only five of them in the state right now, four on one farm and one on another, but they're absolutely amazing. You don't even have to have a person there. It's set up so the cows can just pretty much come and go as they want. And if a cow doesn't show up, they'll notify the owner that, hey, you know,
Bessie didn't show up,
hasn't been in, you know, 20 hours. And so they can come in and see what's going on. If a cow, because they're getting fed at the same time, is a little on the piggy side, the robot will say, nope, you've been in enough. You're not getting milked again. You were here too often. It's amazing. They do everything. You know, washing the teats. They'll pull the cups off of each quarter when that quarter is milked out. They analyze the milk, weigh it. It's just phenomenal.
Well, since you're talking about dairy, we did reach out to several New Hampshire farmers in advance of the show to just ask New Hampshire farmers, you know, the concerns that they wanted to present for today's show since you're here. So, Commissioner Jasper, let's go right to it. Let's hear from one of them.
My name's Sam Kanonica. I'm the owner, along with my partner, Sarah. We own Manning Hill Farm in Winchester, New Hampshire. And our main product that we produce is pasteurized, non-homogenized milk that we bottle on the farm and distribute throughout the area. We're fairly small. We only milk about 25 cows. You know, I think a guy and his wife and family should be able to milk 50 cows and make a good living, put his kids through school, and pay his taxes. But that's just not the reality anymore. And it just makes me really sad. Like, it just, I should have lived 50 years ago. That was kind of the heyday of, you know, operations like ours. But I feel somebody that in that position, first of all, should be a farmer or have recently been a farmer. But I really feel like in that position, the person like Lorraine Merrill or Steve Taylor, they really need to fight for the small farms, because this isn't a big farm state.
Again, that's Sam Kanonica. We reached out to him before the show, and as he mentioned, he's a small dairy farmer. And wow, Commissioner Jasper, lots to pick up on there. First of all, you know, it's sad. He says, I should have been born 50 years ago. I think a guy and his wife and family should be able to have a small dairy farm and make it. Can somebody with a small dairy farm in New Hampshire make it today?
It's very difficult. He's got the right model for a small farm. The problem is that, you know, like happened with with eggs in the 70s, the government was saying, oh, eggs are bad for you, too much cholesterol. Now we find out, oh, well, that was the good cholesterol. Same thing with milk products. Oh, you know, too much fat, it's bad for you. Now that's going away, but it's hard to rebuild that market. So our consumption of milk has continued to decline. And let's face it, when they took whole milk out of the schools under Michelle Obama's program, kids don't like the taste of 2% milk. I never did either. So they're not going to drink that. And we have to realize that milk is good for you. It's important and an important nutrient. And we've got to try to get that milk consumption up. But quite frankly, you know, and I'm not the only one who will say this, but dairy farmers tend to be their own worst enemies, because when times are good, they make more milk. When times are bad, they make more milk. There is no centralized, even within the cooperatives, and 90% of the milk in the United States goes through farmer-owned cooperatives, but they don't manage their milk supply to match the demand.
That's interesting.
And so if you have more product than you have demand, the price is going to be low.
And it's all federally managed, too, and
well,
that's
the,
a problem,
the,
right?
The price is, and that is a problem. But, you know, again, even without that, I think the prices would stay low because we have an oversupply of milk. Too much of it is going into powder and cheese, which is going into warehouses. And, you know, what needs to happen is we need to cut back by about 2% the production in the United States to tighten up those markets, and the price will go up.
Got an email from Jeff in Hillsborough. I was wondering if you support the system currently in place that keeps the price of milk low, or would you support doing away with the system in hopes that it would allow dairy farmers to make ends meet easier and keep less of the nation's and keep more of the nation's dairy farms open? Jeff, thank you for that. So without going into too much detail, yeah, we should inform listeners how the price of milk works, as Jeff suggests and you've mentioned, Commissioner Jasper. It's a little funny. Like, here's this commodity that still a lot of people drink, eat, cheese, but the price is set by the federal government.
It is, and that's been the case, I think, since about the 1940s. It's the federal milk order, and it's set by region. Our region, the price tends to be a little bit higher than some of the other region, but nonetheless, it's still a regional price, and it's set by different classes. So it depends if your milk class one milk is going into fluid milk, and then there's class two, class three, and I think I'm no expert on the classes. There's no need for me to be, but I think, you know, two is tends to be cheese and butter and those things, and three is if it's going into powdered milk. But I'm not sure that doing away with that would actually solve the problem, because the problem is an oversupply issue. And until the dairy industry deals with the oversupply of their product, it's going to be very hard for them to get a good price for the product.
A couple more questions on dairy, and then I do want to talk about all the other types of farms here in New Hampshire.
Sure.
And including that, the big local food and farmers markets movement that we have here, that's been a bright spot for New Hampshire farmers. But just one or two more questions on dairy. So if consumers listening think, okay, I really want to support these dairy farms and farmers, help out New Hampshire dairy, how do they really know what's on the bottle really did come from New Hampshire? Because there's a lot of funny business sometimes with labeling.
They don't. And that's what I'm working on, is dairy premium program for New Hampshire. Because we consume a lot more milk products than we produce, we have a unique opportunity here to have people help support our local dairies. So we're looking at a program where there would be a premium, a different, it would be the same milk bottle, but with a different little symbol on it. So it'd have a different SKU of about 50 cents a gallon right now is the plan. And that money, less some for advertising, would go directly to New Hampshire dairy farmers, all of them, not just those whose milk was in that bottle.
I see.
And that's, I think, receiving a lot of good legislative support. The key to this is to find bottlers who are willing to participate in the program, because it's not going to be the easiest thing. But we don't have to sell all of our milk. We don't need to do 100% of the milk to make a real difference for New Hampshire dairy farmers. We've done the survey work through the UNH Survey Center. We've done two polling things. All of it shows that people really want to participate. And the second poll, which was done in-house, in stores at the dairy cases, something like 79% of the people who were actually reaching into the cases, pulling out the milk, said if their brand did not participate, they would be willing to switch brands to support New Hampshire dairy farmers.
So you're trying to come up with a label that says to consumers, this milk comes from New Hampshire.
Yes, and actually I've had a student at Plymouth State actually working on that, and we've sort of stopped. I'm satisfied with what we have as the idea, but you know, it could be tweak going on, but it's got the outline of the state of New Hampshire. It's got a cow and a barn and a field, and it'll scale down so you can still recognize that, even if we're on a pint of milk. So we've really thought this through, and I'm excited about it. And as I say, we're moving forward, and the challenge is going to be for some bottler to see that this is something that they can do, because there are a lot of loads of milk that are coming just from New Hampshire farms that can be bottled this way.
So do you need legislative approval for this?
Yes, that bill had its hearing last week. It's House Bill 476. The Environment and Agriculture Committee is actually having a work session on it today. I'm hopeful that they're able to come up with any changes they feel necessary and move it on to the full House within the next couple of weeks.
Well, thanks for the email, Jeff. And to the phones, Commissioner Jasper. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, it's a wide-ranging discussion about New Hampshire farms, agriculture. We're sitting down with Agriculture Commissioner Sean Jasper. And again, taking your questions and comments. So keep them coming, exchange@nhpr.org or 1-800-892-6477. And Jen is calling in from Clinton, Maine. Hi, Jen. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi there. Good morning to both of you. I am so proud to hear that the commissioner is looking for a solution to making sure that dairy farmers in New England can continue putting their fresh quality dairy products on their neighbors' tables. But I did have a question about the program fund that he's proposing and the bill. It seems to me that it really does hinge on just one processor. And I'm just wondering, you know, I come from a state where we do have a dairy stabilization program, and it involves all the people who touch the milk, right from the farm to the dairy case in the stores and all the people in between, because they're also integral in making sure that our communities and our farms are successful. So I'm wondering, it just seems like all his milk bottles are in one basket, and I don't know, has he reached out to the one processor and bottler that he's going to need to depend on? Is there a consensus? Have they built that with the retailers? I just would hate to see this program not get the tweaks that it needs in order to be successful and sustainable if, say, one member of those group that touched the milk has to leave the state. I would hate to see the program fail. That's my concern.
Well, Jen, it's good to hear from you. Thank you for calling in. Go ahead, Commissioner Jasper.
Well, I think that's a very reasonable concern. We are certainly having discussions, and I will say that the governor has been very instrumental in working with us to make these discussions happen. I'm not sure that it necessarily hinges on one bottler. Obviously, there's one that stands out for us.
Can you say who that is?
I'd rather not at this point.
Okay, I think I can take a guess.
Yeah, you probably can, but I'm just not going to comment on that. But there are other options out there. Maybe not quite as easy for us to do, but it is very possible that a number of bottlers could participate. You know, one thing about milk, and this has sort of been my joke, maybe a bad one, but milk is very fluid, so it's easy for the cooperatives to move tractor trailers of milk around from one plant to the other. So, you know, it's really, if they don't care that the milk came from New Hampshire or Vermont or Maine, then as long as they get the amount of milk they want, it doesn't matter to them where it comes from. So we do have some options. This program is designed to be flexible in that area.
Well, the farmer, again, that raised this issue, Sam, about small dairy farmers and their struggles, also said he hoped that the agriculture commissioner would be somebody who was a farmer. Now, you're not currently a farmer, Commissioner Jasper, but you grew up on a farm.
I did, and it's been my passion. I mean, my college fraternity is the agricultural fraternity. I've been advisor there for 30 years. So in our national conventions every other year, we're very involved in what goes on. We tour farms, learn about the issues, and I've always kept up on those things. One of the things that a lot of farmers have come up to me and said over particularly the last 6 months, they're beginning to understand that an important part of the commissioner's job is to understand the legislative process and to be able to really advocate through that. Nobody is going to know every agricultural commodity and the ins and outs of it. But having somebody who understands how to get things done in the state of New Hampshire through the legislature is very important, and I think that's something that certainly the governor saw, I think, when he appointed me, that this was going to be something that was very critical.
Well, it's budget season,
yes.
As you know. Is that weird for you, Commissioner Jasper? You used to be on the other end of these commissioners going, no, 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 maybe. Now you're the one making the budget requests.
Yeah, that's certainly a change. I mean, all of it is, because now I'm on the other side of the table. Of course, you know, to some degree, as a legislator, you're always sitting there as a witness when you're advocating for a bill. So that's not terribly difficult, but it's strange for me because I used to just be able to go down and get the bill drafted, get the amendment drafted, and now, you know, you have to find a legislator to do that for you. So it's another step in the process that wasn't there before, and certainly the budgeting is different. But the governor gave us some pretty clear budget parameters, and so, you know, you work within that and hope that things go well. We're early in that process because at this point we still don't know what the governor is going to tell us he's recommending on our behalf from what we requested. So
right,
that remains to be seen.
He's giving his budget address next Thursday. The Exchange will be covering it live, of course. So coming up, a lot more calls and emails. And Commissioner Jasper, some of the issues that we'll be talking about in our next segment have to do with the real struggle to find people to help out on the farm. It's seasonal work. It's hard work. So we'll talk about that. Also, some of the other challenges that we heard from our farmers that we talked to before the show. Keep your questions and comments coming in. Exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
The start of a new year is a great time to evaluate your dreams for the future. Hi, I'm Sarah Alger, Director of Plan Giving for NHPR. including NHPR in your will or estate plan, is an inspired way to spell out your hopes and dreams for your community and for your state. It's also a powerful action you can take today to ensure quality public radio programming in New Hampshire is here for generations to come. Email me at salger@nhpr.org to learn more, or go to nhpr.giftplans.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're learning about the concerns of New Hampshire's farmers with Agriculture Commissioner Sean Jasper. Now, if you have a question about New Hampshire farms, farmers markets, local food, we'd love to hear from you. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. And Commissioner Jasper, before we go back to our listeners, you've been in this position for a year now, as I said, talking with farmers all over the state. Without going into too much detail at this point, could you just tick off a couple sort of key concerns that you're hearing from farmers?
Well, as always, the issue of labor and where do you get people who are willing to do the physical work that's required on a farm, where does that labor come from? That's a real issue. And that's something we've been struggling with in this state for decades. We'll continue to struggle with. I have some hope that in the latest farm bill, I believe there are some provisions to increase the number of authorized people coming in from other countries to work here on temporary work visas, if you will, in those programs. So that potentially is a positive. As I alluded to, there are going to be other solutions dealing with that, but that's going to continue to be a real problem for vegetable growers particularly. The other issue that has come up is the new program, which is the Food Safety Modernization Act that was mandated by the feds. It is funded by the feds, and states are authorized to run the programs themselves under contract. When I was speaker, that program was put over into Health and Human Services. I was not happy with that because I recognized, even though they're doing the restaurant inspections,
food safety inspections, yeah,
this isn't the same because you're actually on the farm, in the fields, in the packing houses, and people thought, well, it's okay because HHS has been doing the milk inspection program for decades. I don't understand why that's there either, but then when it was actually said, well, we'll just use our restaurant rules and overlay them onto the farms, people understood that was going to be a problem. But I was told when I became commissioner that train had left the station and it was too late. But I was down in Washington for my first meeting with my fellow commissioners, secretaries of ags, and recognized that, well, that wasn't too late. So when I got back, we started working on that. And we did transfer the program over to the Department of Ag, so it's become much more user-friendly and
sort of geared more towards farmers.
Towards farmers, and of course, you know, trying to get a hold of Commissioner Myers, who runs over half of this budget in the state.
Indeed, HHS is huge.
Yeah, they're huge versus our little department with 40 employees if we're full-staffed. It's a lot easier to get in touch directly with me.
Again, that's Agriculture Commissioner Sean Jasper talking about some of the issues and problems that he's been hearing from New Hampshire farmers as he goes around the state in his first year on the job. And as I said earlier, Commissioner Jasper, we talked to several farmers before the show today. Let's hear from another one about some of the concerns he has.
Howard Pearl, Pearl and Sons Farm. And the farm is located in Loudoun. We're a produce and maple farm. We start with maple syrup, our first crop, and then we go on to grow summer squash, zucchini, sweet corn, pumpkins, winter squash. We also do a lot of hay for feed for our own horses here on the farm, as well as I sell a lot to the livestock community. I've been now hiring local labor for many years, but I got to tell you, in the last 2 years especially, that has been an extreme challenge because our work isn't desirable for everyone. Yeah, you know, we're not in an air-conditioned, climate-controlled environment. Some days we work very long days. Some days it's really hot. Some days it's really cold. But we just deal with it, and we have a job to do, and we do it. But it's not always the perfect fit for many of our younger members of the workforce who just aren't accustomed to it. And it's interesting.
Again, that's Farmer Howard Pearl talking, Commissioner Jasper, about the real challenge of hiring local. In the longer interview that we did with him, he said, I have been trying to hire local, but for the past 2 years, I just can't do it.
It is a real struggle, particularly for somebody like Howard. And I've talked with him about those challenges. He has told me he almost has to have twice as many people signed up to work as he needs, because there's just so many that just won't come in on certain days. So
they just don't show up.
There are some other vegetable growers who have really done a good job with partnering with the local high schools and finding labor through the high schools, through the FFA, and even in some areas where families summer in the Lakes region, some of those families will tell their kids they've got to get a job, and they go and they work on the vegetable farm. So it is possible to do it, but it's very difficult. There's a bill that was heard on January 23rd, and I don't recall the bill number, but if this was passed in the legislature, it would make things much, much worse for the agricultural industry, because it would limit the period of time that somebody could hire an employee through a temp agency. And that's something that we really need to be able to continue to take advantage of, where rather than having to go through all the unemployment compensation issues and everything else. And some people told me, if I didn't have this program, if I couldn't go to a temp agency, I have no idea where I'd even go to get anybody. So this would limit it to, I don't know, something like 60 days on a temp agency, and then you'd have to hire the person. That would really be devastating for a lot of people. So I'm hopeful that the legislature will kill that bill.
What's the status of the, pardon me if I get this wrong, H-2A visas that bring in farm workers from abroad? We hear in other capacities that visas for foreign workers are being cut. What's the status of those visas?
That's the program I was referring to, that the numbers have increased.
Have increased
that's authorized. But there are also some difficulties within that program that can make it very expensive, and it needs some revamping to make it work better for both the people being hired and the people who want to do the hiring.
Got lots of emails coming in, Commissioner Jasper. This is from Nate and Regina from Longview Farm in Plymouth, who say, my wife and I run a medium-sized vegetable farm in Plymouth. We're under the age of 40. We recently read a statistic that 90% of New Hampshire farms do not have a succession plan or anyone under the age of 40 in a managerial position working for them. What is the commissioner in the department doing for what we see as a crisis for the future of agriculture in the state? They also say, and we'll talk about this a little bit later because this is a good point too, Nate and Regina say, as young farmers, we see climate change as one of the biggest issues facing our farm. We've already seen weather patterns become more erratic and severe, directly affecting planting, harvesting, farm revenue. We'd like to know why the commissioner has been reluctant to accept that climate change is an issue that's affecting farmers in New Hampshire, and if or how the department plans to address the effects of a changing climate on agriculture in the state. Two really, really big points, Nate and Regina. Thank you so much. First of all, the succession plan. I was looking up some numbers yesterday, Commissioner Jasper. The average age of a farm operator, so the person running the place, is 58 in this state.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't speak well for the future of farming.
Well, that number has been high for a long time because, you know, I'm 60 now. My daughter's 24. So if we were still farming, you know, it wouldn't be unusual to say, well, the owner was, you know, in their late 50s, because the next generation hasn't gotten to that point of being able to take over. I think I would argue about the 90% with no succession plan. I mean, just thinking about the people that I know, I think that number's high. It's a problem. There's no question about it. There are organizations out there reaching out to people who don't have a succession plan, trying to bring people in. In either case, a lot of the problem is that the people who are running the farm and are in that age are so stuck in their ways that it makes it very difficult for the next generation to take over.
Now, what do you mean by that? That's really interesting.
somebody will come in, they'll have different ideas, and say it's a family member, the father will say, this is the way we've always done it, we're going to continue to do it this way. And the younger generation comes in and say, but this isn't successful. This isn't, we need to try something else. And just, no, we're not going to do it this way. You know, I had that problem with my dad in the family business. He and I did not work together well until he was 70, you know. And in my younger years, I'd made some decisions that sort of locked me into staying there. But if I'd known, you know, when I was 20, what I knew by the time I was, you know, 40, I wouldn't have stayed in the family business. Because if I could have seen just how difficult the next 20 years could be.
The poultry business.
Well, at that point, we weren't even in the poultry business. It was just, you know, various other enterprises that
I
were
see what you're saying. But
so it's common.
Same scenario happens in
same
family
scenario.
Farms.
And with these plans where they try to match up an aging farmer with somebody who wants to farm, very often, again, because it's a transition period, you know, the guy who's 21, 22, just out of college and wants to take over farm, wants to buy it. And so now you're coming in, it's an even worse situation because you've got somebody who wants the farm to continue, but they want the farm to continue the way that they did it and, you know, perhaps their father and grandfather did it. And you've got this young kid who just fresh out of college with new ideas. And so they try to put them together, and many times there's just a reluctance. Again, same thing, but now you don't even have a young generation that has a commitment to that farm.
Well,
so they
sure.
put them together, and, you know, it just it's like oil and water, and it just separates immediately.
Well, and adding on to the point that Howard Pearl, the farmer, made, that he says that, you know, he's having a hard time hiring young people. They're just mm-hmm. less interested in being on the
sure.
farm. I don't know if that's true or not, because there are a lot of young people in New Hampshire who are really into local food and organic farming and so forth.
Oh, there certainly are. But when it's just, I'm going to go out in a field and pick beans, it's different. Now, I want to address the issue of climate change. And I think the comment that was made about me not accepting it is way off the mark. No doubt in my mind, climate is changing. You know, what that means for the long term, I don't know. I mean, we can go back to droughts. We can go back in history. You know, we have a very small window that we're looking at in the history of the world. But it is changing, and it's having some negative effects. But I did write a couple columns relative to this. And what I said is that people are locked into the idea that we are responsible for climate change, and that may be, but you've got to look at we're in a world. We don't shut off the weather at the borders of the United States. And so for us to be taking all the responsibility for reducing CO2, we're producing 28% of the CO2 in the world. China's at double that, and they are building right now, building more coal power plants than we have in use in the United States.
So you were making more of a political point: who should
take the
responsibility to suck carbon out of the atmosphere?
I don't view it as a political point. I view it as just a reality that we can't solve this problem alone. If China is putting more CO2 into the air, in increasing that number, we can reduce it to a minimum. I mean, and we can't reduce all of it. We each put out 2.5 pounds of CO2 a day just breathing.
But to respond to our emailer, you're saying, absolutely, I believe the climate change is changing, and absolutely, I think that man-made emissions are responsible. The question is, who is responsible for reducing their emissions?
Well, I don't know. It's increasing. I don't know how much of it is man-made. But if I assume that it's all man-made, my assumption also is that we can't eliminate all of that because we're a growing population.
Another question on this issue of young farmers, succession, and so forth, because this is a big deal for folks. Liz sent us an email. New Hampshire's land prices, Liz says, are a large deterrent and challenge for young farmers wanting to start a farm business, an issue I am struggling with as a young vegetable farmer. Liz says, what policies are you working on to improve land accessibility for young farmers? And then Olivia sent us a tweet asking a similar question. How will the Department of Ag be supporting new and beginning farmers in accessing land? To start a farm in our state, young people need to go into serious debt to acquire land, making their operations less likely to succeed. So the good news from those two emails is two young women who want to get into farming. By the way, looking at the numbers, looks like 2/3 of New Hampshire farmers are men and a full 1/3 are women. Thanks to Olivia and Liz for those thoughts. And what do you think about that, Commissioner Jasper?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of truth in that. And unfortunately, the legislature hasn't put a lot of money into land preservation over the years. We used to have a program within the department where there was money that was put aside specifically within agriculture to buy development rights. And we oversee a good number of those properties that have covenants on them. But there are programs out there. There's a lot of good land trusts that are partnering with LCHIP. They're partnering with other organizations nationally and locally to buy those. I mean, I was up in Bath at the Peters Farm a couple of months ago. Was part of LCHIP purchasing development rights for the Scruton Farm over in Rochester, and many other development rights on agricultural land. So there is property out there that we are protecting. And while I'd like to see more done, it's something that we are marching forward with every year. Every year there is more land that is protected.
That's interesting. So if somebody puts their land in a trust, it doesn't necessarily need to just sit there. Someone could actually farm it as long as they promise not to, you know, build a shopping mall there.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting.
So there's land all the time that's changing hands at a very reasonable price where the development rights have been purchased and owned by some other organization. And sometimes that's Fish and Game has land that they own and they allow farmers to use. And as we don't own any land, but we control the development rights. And so there's a lot of that. It's out there. And we are trying to help people make connections. We need to do more there. But again, you know, my department is generally in triage mode. It's from crisis to crisis.
Really? Like what kind of crisis?
Well, we seized...
You know, you think agriculture. It sounds so sort of cozy.
Well, there's unfortunately a lot of animal abuse out there. And while we assist the police, we're not the ones responsible for that. But
the local police, yeah.
The local police or the state police. There was a case where I think 19 horses were just surrendered. And that took a tremendous amount of hours for us to deal with. We've had a lot of issues, you know, like that. I mean, that just don't give us the time to get out there right now. Of course, we're all dealing with legislation
and the budget.
And the budget,
as you said.
And in the summers, you know, the inspections. We don't really have enough people to get all of our inspections done. So there's not a lot of time that we're able to put into long-term planning, which I'd love to be able to.
That's really interesting. And you're right. Your department, you know, you think agriculture, okay, farms, but it's wide-ranging, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
You got the inspections of the farms, you've got rules and regs around land use, you've got animal abuse, which comes under a couple of different entities, including you. I had forgotten about that. So there's a lot going on, and there's a couple more things I want to ask you about. After a short break, Commissioner Jasper, since you mentioned bills, from what I understand, there's a bill in the legislature having to do with what's called agritourism. So I'll ask you about that. And we'll take a lot more of emails of our emailers and callers because people want to ask you questions about farming here in New Hampshire. So all that's coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. And among the topics to be covered, a state house hearing on marijuana legalization and an update on how the new opioid hub and spoke treatment system is working. So send us an email before the show on those topics if you'd like to jump into those conversations on the Roundup. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. And join us tomorrow morning for the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. This hour, we are looking at the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food with Commissioner Sean Jasper. We're hearing the concerns of New Hampshire farmers, and you can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter is NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So, Commissioner Jasper, before we go back to our listeners, I did want to ask you about what's called agritourism, and you well know some New Hampshire farmers in this era have capitalized on the interest in local food and the beauty on their of their farms, making themselves into destinations, function sites for weddings or professional retreats. I went to two farm weddings myself in the past year or so, and they're beautiful. In fact, the former agriculture commissioner, Steve Taylor, presided at one of those weddings at a farm in Walpole. How do you feel about this expansion into what's called agritourism, and what is your role specifically in this?
Well, I'm very excited about it because I think it really presents an opportunity for us to keep more land open, more farms in production. And my role now has become one where the Commissioner of Agriculture is the first stop in the process if there is a difference of opinion between a town and a farm as to what agritourism is. It used to be it'd pretty much go right to court. My decision can be appealed to the Supreme Court, but it takes a layer of legality out of here and is much more affordable for both the town.
That's new, too, right?
It is new. It just went into effect this past year. And I've made it very clear to people who have asked me and during the hearing process, whatever is going on in the farm with agritourism must be something that is actually enhancing the sales of a product grown on the farm. So if you just say, I've got a beautiful view.
And a barn.
And in May, I've got some beautiful apple trees, and it's a beautiful spot to have a wedding. That by itself is not agritourism because it does nothing to sell more apples, and it doesn't do anything to get people to come back to the farm to buy things. So you have to have that nexus. And that is something that for strictly somebody doing apples can be very difficult to say, well, my apples, you're going to sell more apples because you've come to the farm for a wedding.
Why is that important to make that distinction?
Because that's what the legislature said. It is not the primary use of the farm. It is something that's there to supplement the farm income. And to supplement the farm income is meant that you're going to be selling more product. Now, that's easier for somebody to do with a vegetable farm. So if you're an apple farmer, you may want to also have vegetables so that you can have those farm-to-table meals. You might want to be somebody that has a couple of beef cows that you raise and slaughter to be part of the meal. So you've got to have the tie-in, and primarily that's through food. But there was a gentleman who has a nice vista with a Christmas tree farm. And the town was saying...
That was Henniker, right?
I believe that. Yeah. That's correct. And, you know, so what's the tie-in? Well, he hadn't really figured that out. So I talked to him about the possibilities. If you have a wedding, you have the opportunity to have people come in beforehand and tag a Christmas tree for the next year. So if they are buying the Christmas tree and they're tagging it, they're going to come back and get it. That works. If you have the opportunity for wedding guests to buy a seedling, a small tree, and take it home and plant it and say, you know, when this couple got married, I bought a tree and there it is. And every time I look at the tree, I think of that wedding day. Things like that that actually increase the sale of what you're doing on the farm.
So farming gets, in terms of the land use, gets taxed under what's known as current use. So that's a lower tax rate because they're keeping the land open, and that's said to be a benefit. Also, it costs the town less money because you don't require, you know, sewers and schools and extra roads and so forth. But these agritourism entities, some of them have, as you know, Commissioner Jasper, faced pushback from neighbors who say, you know, I moved here because I like living next to a nice, quiet farm, not a wedding factory with music and bands and cars and noisy parties and so forth. So I understand what you're trying to do on the farmer's end, but what about the neighbors who say, well, this is too much?
All of those things are still addressed by the planning board. So this doesn't take away the ability of the town to regulate any of those things you're talking about. But in some zones, and I think for many of the farms, it's not an issue, because if your farm is general zone, you go down the table of uses, all those things may be allowed anyhow. So we wouldn't be arguing about the uses on the farm, but some zones are very specific and say, in this agricultural zone, you can't do X, Y, and Z. And that's where it becomes an issue. Not in terms of, well, you don't have enough parking or sanitary facilities.
That's local
zoning.
That's
still local. We don't, this does not interfere with the town's ability to do any of that.
I see.
It's only the actual use itself. If the town says, no, you can't do that, then we can look at it and say, well, it is agritourism because X, Y, and Z, then it can be appealed either way. But
got an email here from Rebecca, who's kind of getting back to the first point you made, Commissioner Jasper, that farming needs to continually innovate. The only constant is change. Rebecca says, given that our state prides itself on innovation and technology, how can we encourage more technological innovation in agriculture production? She says, how can public policy help foster higher yield, energy and labor-efficient methods, for instance, using abandoned factory buildings for indoor growing, hydroponics, aquaculture? Rebecca says there are some efforts around the state. How can the state encourage more? She also says, with climate change, as well as the issues around labor, cost of land, housing for farm workers, food safety, insurance, the rest, we need new models of agriculture production, and New Hampshire should lead the way, Rebecca says, especially with a university like UNH and its ag program and research capabilities. Rebecca, thank you so much. Lots of big, big topics there, but I just wonder what you think, and especially the role of UNH, near and dear to your heart.
Yes. Well, I think in general, it's not the job of the state of New Hampshire to try to figure out how businesses should operate. Sometimes I question whether we do a very good job of operating our own business. So for us to try to get involved in telling other people what they should do, I see us there as assisting those who have good ideas. And often that is through legislation, directing them in the right area. And of course, you know, people come to us all the time and say, well, how do I grow a better tomato? And I'm like, well, I'm the regulatory agency. You need to go to Cooperative Extension.
Right.
They're the education branch. And they are doing a lot of great things there. The research going on at UNH is fantastic, seeing things all the time. So we can help when somebody comes to us and says, you know, we have an idea, how can we implement that? We can often help. And, of course, there's, you know, a whole department devoted to economic development outside of my department, you know. And it used to be DRED, and now I can't remember the name yet. You know, they're doing a great job over there. So we work to help people. But it in my opinion, it's not the job of government to figure out what somebody else should be doing and creating ways for them to be better at it. We're there to assist when they have a great idea.
You know, a week or two ago, we sat down with the new president of UNH, James Dean, and somebody wrote to us concerned that UNH was downsizing, shifting some of their ag programs, even though the university was started as a land grant by Mr. Thompson in the hopes that, you know, an agricultural school would be built. Again, you're the Commissioner of Agriculture, not UNH, but I know you have ties there. I just wonder what you've been hearing about the commitment.
I am a trustee.
Okay.
I'm one of two commissioners by virtue of office who are university trustees. And there is that myth. Of course, UNH started at Dartmouth. In 1866, Ben Thompson was still alive. So it moved to Durham because Ben Thompson died and left that land, but it was already existing. It was already in agriculture. It was the School of Agriculture and Mechanical Arts. And so there's a lot of stories there that aren't quite true. And in Ben Thompson's will, although he wanted a lot of it to go to agriculture, he said, I recognize that I can't tell you what to do. I'm just suggesting. So the big controversy has really been around the Thompson School of Applied Science, which didn't even become the Thompson School of Applied Science until the 1960s. Part of the problem, and I've always had my differences with UNH on this, is We had a program there that you couldn't take all of your credits and transfer them to the four-year school, but the tuition was exactly the same. We didn't deal with the fact that we were really pricing ourselves out of that market, that students at other two-year schools could take 100% of their credits and come into UNH, but you couldn't be at UNH in the Thompson School and do the same thing. So there was obviously a problem there, and unfortunately, nobody was dealing with anything to do with the problem there, and we were just losing too much money. Thompson School is still alive and well, but with fewer programs than it used to have.
As I said earlier, Commissioner Jasper, we talked to a bunch of New Hampshire farmers in advance of today's show, and I'd like to just hear from one more New Hampshire farmer before we close out with you today.
My name is Pooh Sprague. My family owns Edgewater Farm in Plainfield, New Hampshire. We grow small fruit and vegetables, have an ornamental greenhouse operation, do pick-your-own and CSA. Climate change is something that's, you know, that I think any farmer anywhere in the United States, you know, just shakes his head incredulously when people say, well, it's really not here, you know, or it really isn't an issue. I mean, we've gone from no greenhouses to, you know, 28 greenhouses in 5 years. And I fully expect by the time my son gets done, there'll be double that many here. And the reason is that, you know, crop protection, weather is more extreme. The droughts are longer, the wet spells are more intense and longer, the storms are more violent.
Again, that's Pooh Sprague from Edgewater Farms in Plainfield. We already talked about climate change and the impact that you said you see, Commissioner Jasper. Here's my question for you. What is the department's role, if any, in helping New Hampshire farmers become more resilient? Pooh in that clip said, I never used to use greenhouses to protect my crops, and now I do.
Well, again, really, that is more cooperative extension, working with people on that. That's not something that we're able to do. I've been to the Sprague farm, beautiful operation, and seen his greenhouses. Yeah, those greenhouses also allow him to start earlier and for the production to go longer. So I don't disagree, again, that there is climate change. There's no question in my mind that our climate has changed from what it was when I was a kid. My dad used to keep notes on the side of our egg charts as to how much snow we got and what the extremes were in the temperature. And when I go back and look at what he wrote down in the 50s and 60s, I can't believe how many negative days we had where it'd be 20 below, 10 below, you know, long spells of that. And we haven't had that in, you know, many, many years, but that was definitely the case in the 50s and early 60s. You know, and he talks about the frost getting into the ground and freezing pipes and, you know, and things like that. So I have no reason to doubt it. I've experienced myself.
You've got the personal data there. That's really interesting. Yeah. The temperature records, the snowfalls, and so forth.
Yep.
All right. Well, it was good to hear from him on that issue, because again, that's come up a lot this morning. Another email has come in, Jim asking, this is something I did want to ask you, Commissioner Jasper, how have the recent changes in tariffs affected farming in New Hampshire, if at all? We do hear a lot about the impact on dairy farms and some of the big farmers out in the Midwest, of course, with their grain.
I haven't heard any data for New Hampshire. We're an import state. We don't really export much. We do export some apples, some vegetables, but we're talking exporting them to other states. So there's not a lot there that I've heard that really has affected it. The dairy prices, you know, there are some issues there. But we have been exporting more because there have been droughts in other countries. So it's hard to tell at this point if we've had any real negative effect. I tend to think not anything that's really measurable in the economy.
Well, and everybody will be looking at this new, I want to call it NAFTA. It's not going to be NAFTA now, but that might have some impact. So we'll have to follow up on that. Here's an email from Nancy. Given the ever-increasing demand by consumers for organic food, what will the commission and the department be doing, i.e. programs, marketing, advertising, to encourage organic farming, transition of conventional farmers to organic farming, and establishment of new organic farms to meet this growing demand? Nancy, thank you so much. And I wonder what you think, Commissioner Jasper. You said earlier it's not really your job to tell farmers what to do.
No, we're there to assist. I we will support all farmers, whether they're organic or traditional. You know, this will anger some people, but we can't feed the world on organic. Production is lower. There are a lot of starving people in the world. And so if people find that market for organic, we will continue to certify them. We'll continue to help them. But it's not my job to try to transition people away from that. And frankly, the difference between organic and non-organic is falling, but organic is much more expensive. I just was reading an article yesterday. It's about 7.5% difference in price now to the farmer, and that's probably not enough difference because of what they have to do. Particularly in organic milk, it's becoming a real challenge. So there are people that are going to want that organic. I support that, and will do everything that I can when somebody comes forward and says, you know, this is what we want to do. But I will never be telling somebody who is a traditional farmer that you need to do this. I get a little upset with the word sustainable, which didn't come up here. But I don't know of any agriculture in New Hampshire that's not sustainable. We've been farming here for nearly 400 years.
And it's not easy here.
No, it's not easy here. And I don't know of any farm that has just depleted itself. So farmers are the best people at sustainability. And so that shouldn't be a word that divides us either.
Well, thanks for that email. And, you know, I just want to say to that person who emailed, we'll probably have to follow up with another show on, you know, organic, sustainable, local, because there's a lot of definitions and so forth. So we'll follow up with you later on that point. I have a really quick question for you, Commissioner Jasper. What's more fun, Speaker of the House or Commissioner of Agriculture?
Commissioner of Agriculture, no question.
You didn't even hesitate on that.
No.
Why is that?
There was a lot of pressure. You're dealing with 399 other legislators and constant deadlines. The bills have got to be scheduled, and people are coming at you with their problems. There are still issues here, of course, but I feel I'm able to help people much more directly.
All right. We'll talk again. Thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome.
That's Sean Jasper. Again, he's New Hampshire's Commissioner of Agriculture, and this is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.